This is part three of the interview with Jack Ross. Jack, you've mentioned talking, you've talked about some of the people that you worked with, and I wanted to ask you, you talked about E.R. Jackman, for example, and you said that you've mentioned Roberta Anderson a number of times. Mm-hmm. She followed you as the supervisor?
No. She was a specialist in extension in home economics.
Uh-huh.
And I think she was in home management section of home economics. And when I was involved in this Neighborhood Youth Corps program and the Technical Services Act and several of the Job Corps kind of programs and things like that, she came to me one day and said that she had been following this national program for Job Corps for women, mm-hmm. and thought that maybe the Oregon State had something to offer there. And so together we worked on a project to establish a Women's Job Corps Center to be in Portland. Mm-hmm. But in working with Roberta, I found out she brought a viewpoint on a lot of things, issues relating to women that would not have occurred to us as men working mm-hmm. heavily in agricultural kind of programs. But I found her to be very creative and very very helpful and just a wonderful co-worker. When I first started as a supervisor, as I mentioned earlier, there were four districts, and in each district there was a man and a woman. We call them teams, mm-hmm. supervisory teams. And we traveled together quite a lot to the counties, where we tried to make fairly regular visits to each of the counties and find out what kind of programs they had going on and any particular problems that they might have. And the women worked with the home economics agents pretty directly. And I, for some reason, the men supervisors seemed to work on the county budgets and some of the personnel problems and so on, but the women worked pretty directly with the home economics agents, and I think were a great help to the mm-hmm. home economics agents. They again have a kind of a family-oriented attitude in doing extension work. They usually encompassed or showed a lot of interest in the 4-H youth programs as well as home economics. So they were kind of the strong leaders in family affairs. Mm-hmm. Exclusives of a particular specialty like crops or soils or livestock or something like that. Even though they demonstrated interest in this, they had a strong family orientation, which I thought was helpful mm-hmm. to the extension effort.
It seems that the extension service provided jobs for women. Professional jobs for women, you know, in the 50s and 60s, when it wasn't really that
yes.
common in a wider society.
Yes, that's very true. They also were much like I mentioned earlier again, that when the first extension first started, there wasn't so much emphasis on academic degrees and things like that. Most all of us had just bachelor's degrees. Mm-hmm. So they were being employed directly right out of college, mm-hmm. first entry-level jobs with a bachelor's degree in home economics, for example. Now the tendency is to go on for advanced degrees, master's degrees, and PhDs. I think Roberta had a PhD, did she not? I'm not certain of that.
She had a master's.
Master's, yeah. I think most of them at least went in the master's programs, but nowadays they're pretty much PhD oriented, mm-hmm. which shows the heavy academic. But it is a marvelous opportunity for women to for jobs, and it's still going strong.
Mm-hmm. did you yourself, you went on to graduate school? Did you take a sabbatical?
Yeah, well, I took a sabbatical. I should have done it much earlier than I did, but I took a sabbatical in 1959 and went to the University of Wisconsin and got a Kellogg scholarship to go there to, and I got a master's degree in what they call an extension administration. Okay. Again, not oriented to crops or soils or anything mm-hmm. like that, but it was in the administration. And it was not specifically required, but I was almost ordered to go. They were basically telling me that in order to keep my job, I needed an advanced degree. Mm-hmm. And so I went there with three children, which was whole family, and it wasn't an easy thing to do. But in hindsight, I think it was good for me. I learned a great deal there about administration and personnel and budgeting and so on. Mm-hmm. And so when we were being encouraged to go on for PhDs, but I was not inclined to mm-hmm. go farther. I had figured that I was about at the level I was going to be in extension anyway. I was a supervisor at that time.
Mm-hmm. Another person you've worked with, I've talked about before, was Gene Scheel.
Gene Scheel.
Could you talk a little bit about him and what his position was?
Gene Scheel was an assistant director when I was first in extension, and he was from the Midwest and had a strong journalistic background, and was hired by Mr. Ballard, and he headed up in a position that was responsible for a number of specialists. He was in charge of the Extension Communications Office, where Len Calvert worked and Arnold Ebert worked. And he also was responsible, I think, for the Extension Specialists in Agricultural Economics, and I'm not sure which others. But he was a great advocate of program planning, and I think that's what encouraged Mr. Ballard to hire him. He was a great one on planning and long-range goals and objectives and this kind of thing, and he used to write most of the extension annual reports for the state, which was submitted to the federal government. Mm-hmm. And extremely talented writer and a good solid thinker. Mm-hmm. I think Gene was, can't think of what other specific responsibilities he had, but he was an integral part of the extension administrative team when I first joined it. One who was easy to talk to and gave good advice on mm-hmm. things that came up. Mm-hmm. I strongly recommend you talk to him. I think
you've talked a little bit at different times about the different reports, and could you talk a little bit about the reporting system? I'm thinking of the SEMIS, or State Extension Management Information System.
The reporting system, I don't know what it currently is, but all the years that I worked there, each county agent was required to write a monthly report. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty heavy, you know. But the agents were good at writing monthly reports, and they reported every manner of thing that they were involved in for that month, including some statistics, you know, number of farm visits that they made, number of visits that farmers came into their place, and news articles that they prepared, various statistical information that was all compiled then here at Corvallis and then sent on to the National to be presented to others on up the line about how many contacts they made and so on. And it was pretty vital. So then each county was required to submit an annual report, which was a compilation of the highlights of all of the annual, of the monthly reports that had been written by the agents. And that was a pretty rigid requirement for many, many, many years. So the supervisors were required to read these monthly reports and glean from them whatever information they could about problems or opportunities for improving the extension programs. And that turned out to be a pretty heavy burden. Here, if you have 9 counties and you have 4 or 5 agents per county, or you say 4 counties, that's 36 monthly reports to read each month, in addition to the 9 county annual reports you were supposed to read, and you yourself were required to submit a report for your district, for the 9 counties. And so a lot of reporting going on. And that information was supposed to be stored someplace and be of value to somebody, but I don't think we did too much reviewing of the old reports. I think they just went into the archives or went into someplace. But at one time, we were required to participate in what was called a State Extension Management Information System, called SEMIS. SEMIS. I never will forget it. And it was a monstrous statistical project, computerized, that was foisted on us by the Federal Extension Service. We had no choice but to participate. And Gene Lear was our director at that time, and he asked me to take over the responsibility of getting that established for our service. And it was a monstrous affair, and very, 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 very complicated, and not very popular with anybody. Mm-hmm. It was just detail after detail. Everything you did, you were supposed to record, so that at the end of the month you could submit the SEMIS report. And we had tons and tons and tons of paper coming out consolidating all this information which we were supposed to get information from, and it was a monstrous failure as far as I was concerned. But it took up months and months of my time trying to put on a happy face and convince the agents and the specialists that this was a good thing to do, even though I myself was not fully committed to it. But it was not something of our choice. It was a requirement. It was one of those distasteful jobs that you have in your life, and that was one of them. Still, though, I'm sure, but the narratives, the written annual reports, I think would be great, great resource to go through. A lot of reading, but there'd be some marvelous information in there. The narratives, the statistics I'm not so excited about, but the narrative reports of some of the programs would be tremendous. And should be kept forever.
Mm-hmm. Did you? These were the early years of computers. How did that impact your work in the 70s, for example?
Well, that was before the current system where everybody has a computer. Right. This was all just information that we mechanically, manually put together, which was fed into computers, and then it came out with this gobs of stuff. And it really wasn't, we weren't really into the computer as you know the computers nowadays.
So it was more the data processing.
More data processing, yeah. More, it was very cold and very, I think I told you the quick story about Bob Every, who was an entomology specialist, who just was a real clever guy. And I went to his office one day about some other things, and we got, and I looked at all these little pint jars. He had a whole row of pint jars on his desk, and each pint jar had a label on it, which was one facet of the CMS reporting system, like the number of phone calls, the number of phone calls he made, the number of things that came up in his daily activity. And he had a whole bag of little beans, white beans. And every time he'd get a phone call, he'd take out a bean and throw it in the phone call pint jar. So he said, so that at the end of the month, he could count the number of beans he had in each one of these jars. The only way he could keep track of all this statistics.
Yeah.
I love that. It was screamingly funny.
Yeah. Are there other people you worked for or worked with that were memorable?
Oh, golly. That's a very good answer, but I'd say all of them. I think the extension people are a special breed, kind of, and they're just outgoing, helpful, congenial people, and would naturally flow into the extension kind of work. If they enjoy working with people, enjoy being helpful, enjoy being productive, and see the results of your efforts and so on, that attracts those kinds of people. I can't think of a single lemon in the bunch.
You then decided to retire in 1975?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know where I developed this attitude, but I have always been an advocate of early retirement, feeling like after you work for 30 some years in a position, you've earned your right to do other things that you don't have time to do in your normal growing up period. And I've seen too many of my friends who've worked right up to 65 and died at 66, and I thought that was, what a terrible waste. They never got a chance to enjoy doing other things that they might have enjoyed doing. So I've, all my adult life, I always thought, I'd like to, there's some things I want to do that I'm not able to do now, and I'd like to retire early and get them done.
Mm-hmm.
And I did.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that you did in retirement? I know you've talked about the Kiwanis.
Yeah. First project I had was I built a house. I built a vacation cabin over in Deschutes County. It took me 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed doing that. Built it from the ground up. Always wanted to do electrical work and plumbing work and carpentry work, and I did that, got that done.
Mm-hmm.
And I've enjoyed playing golf and doing a lot of recreation things that I didn't have time to do when I was working. So I've enjoyed, and this is kind of personal, but as it turned out, it was a good thing. My first wife was contracted cancer shortly after I retired, and I was able to take care of her for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which if I had been trying to do and work at the same time would have been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to be a caretaker for 6 years. So that worked out really well. And we did some traveling that would not have been possible if I had waited too long. I was able to travel, physically able to do a lot of traveling. We went to Hawaii and went to Europe and went to various places in the United States. Took several trips around the country, visiting state parks and things like that. Went to some elder hostels and things. So I've thoroughly enjoyed retirement.
What are some of the projects you've worked on in the Kiwanis Club? Because you said they're in talking about the service ethic that so many people have in the extension service.
Oh gosh, the one that's most popular right this minute that I've been heavily involved in is installing what they call safety bars or grab bars in elderly people's homes, in their bathrooms and showers. When people have operations, hip operations and so on, the therapists call us and arrange for us to put bars in people's homes when they can come home and have support that they they carry. And then been heavily involved in delivering Meals on Wheels. Our club has a 2 days that we work Meals on Wheels, and I coordinate the drivers and do driving for the Meals on Wheels program. Takes quite a lot of effort. And we for several years, I guess I had an occasion to check it just the other day, starting in 1977, I've been doing a lot of volunteer work with what's called the Old Mill Center here. It's a school for preschoolers, and for kids with from abused families and disabled kids, autistic children, and so on. Been doing a lot of work for them. I've built a lot of their classroom furniture and in addition to that, our club has been doing cleaning up their landscaping at their school for years. And also, I was on the board of the Vina Moses Center here, which is a center which collects clothing and all kinds of things to be distributed to disadvantaged families in the community. I was on the board there for about 8 or 10 years. And have since retired from that, but I still work with them. And we heavy financial contributors to their program. Never a dull moment.
Yeah. On this biography, you wrote. You said in 1994 you were named Corvallis Senior First Citizen. You mentioned. Why did they honor you? Was there a specific?
Well, that's an annual affair. It's been going on in Corvallis for years, and the various clubs and so on in the town nominate different people for it, and then there's a committee which I've since served on, a committee that meets and goes through all these nominations and then selects a winner. But I think it was largely due to my work in Kiwanis. A lot of community, and that's what they look for, is a lot of community service as a volunteer. And I think I showed you my plaque even. But that was kind of fun. You don't do that volunteering work for that recognition. It just kind of sneaks in when you aren't looking.
Can you talk about your work with VOCA, V-O-C-A, Volunteers and Overseas Cooperative Assistance?
Yeah, this is a program that's still going on, and it's sponsored by the AID, the Federal Agency for International Development, AID, and VOCA is a called Volunteers and Overseas
Cooperative Assistance?
Cooperative Assistance, yeah. And what they do is And it's not, it isn't entirely agricultural, but it's heavily oriented to agriculture, where a developing country will apply to AID for assistance in helping them with some phase of agriculture. And so if they approve it, then the AID, the Volcker people, find people all around the country to go to this country and spend anywhere from 3 weeks to 6 weeks working with their representatives in their country, helping them with various agricultural projects. And the country of Belarus had a school at Minsk. It's an agricultural school, and they had heard about the extension service in other, like in Poland and two or three other European countries, had heard about how well this extension business like the United States, was working in Poland, which they had never had before. So Steve Bessie and I went to Belarus to this college in Minsk, or in, not Minsk, a metal block. Anyway, we went there and spent 3 weeks meeting with the administrators in the college, explaining to them how an extension service works and what's required in getting an extension service going. And then we wrote a report for them to follow. And I guess the end product, well, they don't have any money. Mm-hmm. You know, they were enthusiastic about the idea. We went around and talked to several of the leading co-op managers in the country and met with a lot of faculty members at the university. They all thought it was a great idea. Everybody thought it was a wonderful idea, mm-hmm. but they didn't have any money, so it never came to fruition. I mentioned Minsk. Minsk is the capital of Belarus. Why can't I think of the name of it? Sorry, it just okay. left me here. That was about 7 years ago. And it was quite an experience.
Okay, this is the end of part 3.
I think of the name of the place.